Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, my guest is Jamaica Kincaid, and the book is called See Now Then. And as we talk, I think you'll come to see more and more deeply into the title. To begin with, I want to say that Jamaica Kincaid loves to find the way to make a book, an event, something new. Something fresh, something dangerous and brave. My deepest memory of Jamaica, I attended a lecture that she gave on Thomas Jefferson, and there was some tittering in the audience. There were unusual phrases, and Jamaica looked up and said, "Yes, laugh. You Americans love to laugh. It is one of the things that you do. You laugh. It's one of the things that you like best to do." And everyone in the room was completely shaken, didn't know how to respond. Would they laugh? Would they leave? Would they applaud? Would they become enraptured? Well, they did all those things, and you continued to give your lecture. Now, that bravery is true of this book as well. The first thing that people will not know, they will not know how to respond. Is it a novel? Is it biography? Are you telling scandalous secrets about yourself and others that you know? And it goes so deeply. And it's not any one thing. It's 4, 5, 6, 8, 20 things. And there's no one answer to those questions. No, it's not. Yes, it is.
Yes, that's... I've already encountered that. Is it biography? I think someone just said that I'd written a book called The Autobiography of My Mother, and I should have called this book The Autobiography of Jamaica Kincaid. it is neither a biography, autobiography. It is writing. I've always wanted to be a writer. No one who knew me as a child is surprised that I became a writer. It's true that I don't remember writing, but I do remember that I was always pretending I was writing because I had nothing to write on. I was an only child. I would pretend the broom was a person and I would chastise the broom because the broom hadn't answered my questions properly. And I would read to the broom, or I'd read to all sorts of inanimate objects, and I would write to them. I used to pretend I had a cousin in Trinidad named Jillian. For some reason, her name was Jillian, and I would write pretend things to her. So I always wanted to be a writer, but I didn't know it was possible.
Now, in this one, See Now Then, it's astonishing because it's about a marriage, and the husband says unbearable things that will not let the lyric impulse, the musical impulse, thrive. Funny because he's a composer.
Yes.
Funny because he'll say things that any of us would say, "Oh no, please, he didn't say that. You came here on a banana boat." You know, shocking things. And that impulse is throughout the book. He's like a spigot.
Yes.
That would turn it off.
Yes.
And the book has to keep watering and irrigating itself to overcome the yes. dark energy of Mr. Sweet.
Yes, yes. I think that I have observed situations like that, the darkness of one person or the I want to use the word enfeebleness, the not weakness, but the pace of one person is not the same as the other. But the other person is quite satisfied or content with the pace of their companion and sees no need really to... they have a more acceptingness of it. But I think it seems to me the marriages I've observed, they were like that. That people are not the same, and some people go along in their lives. But in this book, I want to say that book, because I don't want to claim it too much, since it's in danger of being overwhelmed by my presence.
Yes, but what's amazing is that it seems to be about the discovery. Given how much people change over the course of a marriage, and the husband will say, oh, when we married, you were fascinating. You were wonderful. You were so brave and interesting. And, you know, see now then.
Yes.
People change over a marriage.
Yes.
He no longer sees those things in her.
Yes.
And what Jamaica Kincaid is doing as a writer is inventing the sentence in which a character changes within the sentence itself.
Yes. Yes, within the sentences themselves, the characters exchange lives with each other within the sentences, which is why the sentences are so long, and which proves irritating to the minds that are not as substantial as yours, Michael.
No, but its original... impulse is that as you read it, you learn how to read it,
yes,
which is the true true of any great book. You know.
Well, it's funny you put it that way, because as I was writing it, that was the way it had to be written. I kept wanting. There was an impulse to make it more conventional. Like I kept thinking sometimes as the sentences would go. I should make a break here, but it wouldn't work. Whenever I made a break, it had to begin again in the way I was doing it originally. I couldn't. It made no sense to stop and start a new paragraph. It had to continue, because the overwhelming character in the book is time, and the most important thing, as you can see from the title, was to understand how it is that we human beings enter and exit in moments, in time. What is time? What is a day? I remember asking, I hope she won't mind me mentioning her name, but I asked Elaine Scarry once, when they say the Earth is 4.5 billion years old, is it 365 4.5 billion years? And she looked at me and she said, yes, of course. And because I thought, it's 465 billion of these. And in fact, I once read that it rained for 100 million years, and it's the 100 million years that creates the atmosphere in which we now live. And I tried to understand what that might be. It was when I first moved out to California, and I lay down and I thought, 100 million years. And I must have done something to myself, because I entered a state that was not depression, but it was some strange state, and I had to work to get myself out of it. And when I did, I can't go back into it. I can't create it again, but I miss it still.
Like a state of suspension?
No, it wasn't suspension, and it wasn't depression. It was just... I didn't know really where I was. I'd never had that feeling before. It was as if I'd done something to the chemistry of my brain by concentrating in such a peculiar way. I was just trying to understand what 100 million years could be.
I'm talking to Jamaica Kincaid the remarkable author of See Now Then, whose musical sense has intersected with a beautiful sense of syntax and grammar to create works that from the very beginning, the very shortest story, Girl, in the very first book, At the Bottom of the River, seems to be itself an origin point here.
Yes. Well, that after I finished this book, I understood the lineage of it that was in that, it's the germ of it was in that first short story. And I hope it doesn't complete a circle, because I never want to complete a circle. But in that short story, I was working with time, too. It is one long sentence of 300 words. It's only a sentence, but it's within that sentence is a story, and it is also the compression of time, a way of understanding how time passes and what it produces and what is time. Is it something that, it clearly is something necessary to human, it's attached to human, it's sort of like a dog it's a way of domesticating, I suppose, or binding to us and making us account for our existence. But in that story, that simple story of tracing a female span from a young girl into a young woman in 300 words, that's what I was doing, how to show what happens to you, the passage of time, how you are modified by it, how it modifies, how it expresses itself through, for instance, your mother, how it expresses itself through your attachment to manners, to civilization, and so on and so on. But it was the main character in it is also time. And I guess I've always been trying to understand, what is it that happens to you? Where are you?
And so in this book, See Now Then, as the sentence which will take a character from New York City courtship to a house in Vermont, I believe, and this marriage will take many twists and turns. Both of the children will be born, and we will be in the room as they come out, as the mother's legs are spread. Mm-hmm. The memory of the pain then and the recollection of it now will occupy a single sentence. As the children in that sentence grow themselves and change, and the father becomes more and more indifferent to them, and the mother, Mrs. Sweet, realizes in this single sentence that the father is incapable of anything but indifference to them, that he is what he was when he was 6 years old and playing music for his parents' friends. Mm-hmm. He always needs to be praised. He always needs to be at the center of attention. And the sentence moves on. Now, you wrote that long sentence at The New Yorker in Girl.
Yes.
How did that magazine and the writers coming in and out shape your sense of what a sentence can do?
Actually, they shaped it in that I didn't want to be like them. I didn't want to write like the people writing at The New Yorker. Then it's funny you ask that. The New Yorker then, you know, was mainly these really brilliant writers, but they were white men. And we used to, my friend Sandy Fraser and George Drew, we used to make fun of them because in July there would suddenly be a burst of activity among them. They wrote a lot. And we used to say, oh, it's the Brearley School uniform writing, because in July, their children went to Brearley School, the Brearley School in New York, and so they had to pay the school fees and buy the new uniforms. And so we used to make fun of them. Of course, you know, we ended up having children, and every July when school time, we too were writing stories to send our children to school. But my writing grew out of me not wanting to write like the people who are writing for The New Yorker. And I won't name them because actually I came to admire them very much, but I didn't want to write these. I never wanted to say we did something. I hated the we. I was wrong to.
That was the talk of the town style.
I hated the talk of the town.
We went to Carnegie Hall.
We went, yes. And I didn't like the men. But when I, to Mr. Sean's credit, he loved my writing. And when I wrote Girl, and I just wrote it, and I should tell you how I wrote it. Someone had given us as a Christmas present a book of poems by Elizabeth Bishop called Geography 3. And that February I opened the book. I'd never heard of Elizabeth Bishop. It was February 1977. I'd never heard of her. I opened it, and the first poem in it was In the Waiting Room. And I read it, and I can remember reading it and looking out the window at a building in which I was told on the top floor, it was an old loft building, on the top floor, Joni Mitchell lived there. I remember reading the poem and looking across at the light. The light on the building would be purplish, lavenderish, the late afternoon light in February. And after I finished reading In the Waiting Room, I sat down and I wrote Girl. I wrote it one go. I wrote it.
That's so fascinating because she, Elizabeth Bishop, has this incredible short story called In the Village that she printed it as the middle section of one of her books of poetry. I think it was called North and South.
Oh, yes.
And each sentence, she decides, will have one memory. And it's so condensed, and as you move, memory, 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 memory,
wow,
memory, memory, it shapes you. And these sentences in this new book, See Now Then, by my guest Jamaica Kincaid, the sentence in their musical phrasings, in their comma-to-comma moments, tell you how to go about reading this. It's all within a rhythm of ongoing perception that by the end of which the reader is being buffeted in exactly the way Mrs. Sweet is. She is experiencing an ongoing attack that we've been hearing bits of in the very first chapter. By the end, chapter 8, that attack is a tirade, and we recoil from it because we are in her dreamier, more musical, more poetic, more time-shifting sensibility.
Mm. Yes. She is, you know, in the end, the most vulnerable and the most destroyed by the experience, and they all fairly well survive the experience. It's not clear that she does survive this traumatic, an overused word, I realize, in contemporary life, but this really catastrophe of the situation she came to make, the life she loved. It's not clear, except that she does see that the trees are budding in the end, and she, and so that might be. I hadn't meant to have it be a sign of anything hopeful, because I hate that sort of thing. But yeah, she is the most powerless in the whole situation, and she enjoys it. She enjoys the powerlessness. However, she's also the narrator,
and in the course of this narration, she is the most stable,
yes,
presence, yes, because she had decided, whatever happened, that this required love, and
yes,
that she would love, and that she would love and love more as children arrived. And then she comes to the realization, or rather she's told, that love hasn't been the correct response.
Yes.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Jamaica Kincaid about her book, See Now Then, published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. We'll continue after this short break.
This is Connie Alvarez. Bookworm is produced by KCRW, a nonprofit public radio station in Los Angeles. It costs money to put this program together. Please help support us by going to kcrw.com/join.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, this is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Jamaica Kincaid about her recent book, See Now Then. It's about a family, a marriage, an erosion, the way this family fits at the tiny latter end of all of the history of the earth.
It's true. I meant that.
And it's a beautiful thing because essentially she comes up against not the failure of love, but love's absolute helplessness when confronted with the opposite of love. It doesn't know what to do.
That is absolutely true. Yeah, love is a powerful thing, but when it's also very fragile. It's easily trampled and not killed. It's never killed, but it's easily destroyed. It rises again, but it's easily destroyed. And it's so sincere, and it's one of the most strengthening things. But it's when it meets hatred, it just quails.
Well, you know, Gertrude Stein is famous for saying that when she wrote A Rose is a Rose is a Rose, that the rose was read for the first time in hundreds of years of English literature. And, you know, the Jamaica Kincaid effect is to describe things as if seen for the first time, which are, pardon me, that's the prose style of The Eyes of Love, is seeing everything as if it were absolutely freshened.
Yes. That, I think, I suppose I love that, looking at that way, but the influence of it are many, actually. The influence of it is reading, you know, and reading something new. I so often regret having read something because I won't see it the same way again. To describe something familiar as if it's new is one of the great pleasures and addictions I have to writing, to see it new.
The boys and men around her say to her, "You sound like a BBC announcer."
Yes.
On some tropical island. They make fun of anything.
Yes.
She can think of to do.
Yes.
Anything within her resources.
Yes.
Becomes an object of scorn.
Derision.
And derision. Yes.
Yes. But she thinks that it's a form of love for her. She can't imagine that these people she loves is not do not love her, so that the joy they feel in the deer eating her newly opened tulips is shocking to her. If they had just said the deer ate your tulips, but that they said the deer ate your turbans.
and she's, it goes back to the beginning of the show. You Americans love to laugh.
Yes.
And she comes to take that laughter as their form of love, but it isn't.
It isn't, yes. It isn't. It's an amazing thing for her to see the people she loves laugh at her. I have this theory about writing that I always tell people who ask me about writing, is that you have to know everything and you have to know nothing at once. And I often thought when I was putting the book together that 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 was true.
You know, we could read this book phrase by phrase, and I think it is a rippling effect that whatever the book may reveal, it will reveal still more the second and the third time round, because knowing nothing and knowing everything is quite a space to occupy.
Well, yes. No, it was, I hope I only have you for a reader and an interrogator, because I will tell you everything, and I don't want to know everything about the book, but absolutely. I don't want to know everything about the book now that I've finished it with it. But it is true that everything in it has all sorts of carefully constructed secrets and revelations for me, and I didn't think anyone would see them, and I am deeply touched that you...
Well, thank you, Jamaica. You know that I love you.
I love you too, and I really mean that.
Thank
you. Yes.
I've been talking with Jamaica Kincaid, author most recently of See Now Then, published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. Thank you, Jamaica, for joining me.
Thank you very, very much. It's a pleasure.
It's a pleasure to sit across from you. You can comment on today's show or read an excerpt from Jamaica Kincaid's See Now Then at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. My co-producer is Connie Alvarez. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to Robert Dewhurst. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I'm a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she's a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mail of Sparks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Nick Flynn is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.